You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready. Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short routes.
The boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
It's Reception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Coe, Matt Harmon here with you. You're listening to Reception, Perception, the show. All right, Matt. next week, we have the year two players dropping, but you will not be on the show next week to talk about it. But as a little bit of a preview, hey, listen, our guy Matt Harmon needs a break, guys. All right, Jesus Christ, right? The guy's been working his ass off. Can the man take a vacation? He's going to take a vacation next week. We'll have a guest on and do all those things. Anyways, but of the year two guys that you've got, you know, semi-charted right now, is there somebody that we should be looking at? Somebody that you're excited about? What you thinking here?
Yes, I wanted to sort of let people know this. Number one, because originally the year two guys were supposed to come out this week, but then I was traveling from LA with the draft, which is an unforeseen thing because Yahoo kind of put that together last minute. There was just not enough time post-draft to this week to get it out. But all those guys are going to be up on the site, or as many as possible will be up on the site next week. So starting May 12th, rolling out, or May 13th, is it? Well, it's starting rolling out then. But beyond the point there, it is a really interesting group. And, you know, this group was even more popular than the prospect profiles last year on the site, which is pretty interesting. And I don't know that if that's going to happen this year. I don't know if it's going to happen this year just because the prospect profiles were really popping this year. It was a great class, and people subscribed and checked it out, which, you know, we super are so grateful for people to checking out the site and everything. But it was an interesting group in terms of the year two players last year. I think this is a very fascinating group as well. Couple of just quick takeaways. You know, Jackson Smith and Jig was really funny because he's somebody I wrapped up the sample with at the end of last week. And, man, it's so funny because, Jackson Smith and Jigba on film was fine to very good. You know, and it's so funny to kind of think of the tenor around his rookie season right now, which is just, huge disappointment, big, almost just a big, you know, disappointment of a rookie season. It's like,
is that right?
He was actually pretty good. His reception perception results are pretty good. It wasn't perfect.
I'm confused, Matt. What were people expecting from Jackson Smith and Jigba playing alongside Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf?
Yeah.
I'm confused. You know, the guy had 630 yards last year with four touchdowns, made a couple splash plays, made his presence felt in a few different games. I actually thought he had a fine, totally fine rookie season.
That's sort of the interesting thing here. And you know, we just did our rookie projections episode on the last show. And it's just sometimes our expectations get way too out of whack for these guys in their first season, especially for, you know, a guy like Jackson Smith and Jigba, who was a good prospect, a first-round prospect, but not – you know, not a Roma Dunze, Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison type prospect.
Yeah.
You know, not a perfect prospect. And he went to a situation where, you know, I love Jackson Smith and Jigba. I didn't draft him in a single redraft league last year because of what you just said. He was playing behind two, superstar level receivers. Now, I think Tyler Lockett is declining a little bit, but you know, because he's an older player. But
sure.
At his best, like superstar receiver, DK's in that superstar tier to me. Like these guys are true, not just like good players, but like number one receivers. Like could be number one receivers on right. A variety of NFL teams. And you know, JSN like got injured towards the end of the preseason, and I know people are like, oh, it's a wrist injury. It's not like it's a Achilles. Okay, well, any missed time at the right. At any missed time for these guys in the offseason is tough to make up. It's just you're gonna
right.
It's gonna be tough to make up. So it's just. Again, when the RP results come out, I think people will look at them and be like, yeah, this is pretty good. And yeah, it was pretty good. Like, I'm still sort of in kind of discovery mode about what I think his ceiling is as a player, right? Like, does he have the ceiling to be one of the elite receivers in the league? I think we're still working around that. There were okay. some issues, like in terms of drops. He's not the best after catch player. He's not like elite in terms of his press score, but. Certainly a guy that I thought was really good against man coverage in like one-on-one ISO situations when he gets a free release. And like the press score is good. 69.7% is going to be the overall success rate. You'll see it on the site. I think there's a lot of room to grow and build for Jaxon Smith-Njigba. And I can't wait to see like what this unit looks like. If they can fix up the pass protection, which was the biggest issue for the offense last year, really rough from a protection standpoint, threw kind of everything to hell, and what this group's going to look like in Ryan Grubb's offense, which I think is going to be really fun in terms of what he wants to do pushing the ball down the field.
I mean, bottom line is Seattle still was targeting their wide receivers at such a high clip. You know, 361 targets to wide receivers last year. That was the 10th most targets when we're talking about just to wide receivers. So the 10th most targets to wide receivers last year. And that's with Geno Smith, man. So and not just Geno Smith, but also Pete Carroll in the mix as well. So, I don't know. It's certainly interesting. They could open it up just a little bit more. As you mentioned with Tyler Lockett declining a little bit, I wonder if JSN steps forward, plays more snaps, and has a little bit more of an impact with this Seattle offense. I don't know. We'll see. I'm not having a huge projection for JSN, but, you know, again, if people are disappointed in last year's stat line, I'm just like, what were the expectations coming in? 1,000 yards? You wanted 1,000 yards from JSN? Come on, bro. Let's be realistic, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I think he's going to be – he could just end up being a little banged, right, like from a production standpoint because he's got these two other guys on the field and, like – Right. Geno's a good quarterback. I think Geno's a good quarterback, and I don't think he's like in danger of losing his job to damn Sam Howell or anything like that. I think good quarterback, but is he going to support like 1,000 yards receiver, 1,000 receivers? That'd be very like a bold prediction for him to do that. Which actually, I'm pretty sure I made that bold prediction at one point, like on the Eckler show last year. But yeah, you can't be held accountable for anything said on that show.
Exactly right, 100%. All right, let's talk about some of these teams that we thought. You know, again, we addressed their and assessed their wide receiver needs. And these are teams that did not take a wide receiver early at all. I want to start with the Falcons here, where we said, okay, there was probably a little bit of a critical need here for the Falcons to surround Drake London. Now, they did some of that in the offseason by, you know, acquiring Darnell Mooney, going and get Rondale Moore. They also have Kyle Pitts. They've got Bijan Robinson. But, man, they waited till pick 187. To take a wide receiver, and I don't know, Matt, were you surprised by that? Did you think they need to address that position a little bit earlier?
Yeah, so sort of the framework for these teams we're going to talk about today, I put together this list of teams that I thought were like somewhat wide receiver needy. Some of them we talked about in our wide receiver needs episode before free agency. Like you mentioned, some of these teams did address the position in free agency, but there's still teams that I think could have like justifiably added a receiver along the way, somewhere along the way in the draft, and I think all eight of these teams are probably telling us something about their wide receiver room by waiting till after pick 110. Like all these teams, some of them didn't add receivers at all. Some of them didn't add a receiver until like after the top 110 picks. So I think you're not totally counting on that guy to be a year one impact player.
Right.
So I think they're telling us something about the wide receiver depth chart as is. What is that something? For the Atlanta Falcons, I think the something that they're telling us is, one, there is a tremendous amount of internal faith in Drake London to just be a volume hog receiver. I think that is what they're they believe about the player. It's what this coaching staff has said about the player since the moment they got there. I also think this indicates that they are going to be counting on Kyle Pitts to play a big role. I think they're also going to be counting on Darnell Mooney, not to the same degree from a volume perspective, but Darnell Mooney and Rondale Moore to play pretty significant roles in this receiver room. They did take a wide receiver, Casey Washington, out of Illinois at pick 187. Don't have an RP profile on old Casey Washington, but I do think they're going to be counting on the superstar theoretical, like, the theoretical superstar talent on this roster in London and Pitts and Robinson, Bijan Robinson, to really carry the vast majority of volume overall in the offense. And they're going to be counting on Darnell Mooney and Rondale Moore to be quality role players behind them.
I don't care what anyone says, but could you imagine this offense with Kirk Cousins, you know, Raheem Morris, the new head coach, okay, Rome Odunze playing opposite of Drake London? What is that? Bro, what does that offense look like? Drake London, Rome Odunze, Kirk Cousins with Bijan Robinson. Good night. Let's go.
Yeah, it would look pretty awesome. I do think, and I'm not justifying what Atlanta did with the Michael Penix thing or justifying passing on Rome Odunze, who I loved and would have, like, totally just said, like, you know, hats off, that's a great pick if you take him at eighth overall. I do think it's at least worth wondering, like, would we get to a point where, like, Kirk Cousins is a good quarterback, okay? Like, yeah, he's healthy. Let's say he's out there, he's on the field, he's a good quarterback, okay? But again, are we counting on Kirk to, like, feed all of these mouths, you know? Like, these are all guys that, like, are anticipating a bump in production and a bump in, you know, overall usage in terms of, like, London and Pitts with this new offense and with this new quarterback than what they've gotten previously with Arthur Smith and, you know, friggin' Desmond Ritter and stuff. Now we're throwing another top 10 drafted skill position player into the mix here who's going to want to come in here and get a lot of volume, okay? So do we really think Kirk Cousins is the guy to elevate all those players, like all these young players on the ascendant of their career? Rome Odunze, obviously, if he come in here, he's on the uptick of his career because he's a rookie that's really, really good. Yeah. I do think it's worth, like, just investigating if, hey, maybe simplifying the picture here in that we throw 50% of the targets to London and Pitts and you know, Bijan's pretty involved there. Maybe that's the best way to look at it. And we're not, like, overloading the kind of the target distribution too much.
Come on, man. Stop it. Stop it, Matt. I don't even know if you believe that, for God's sake.
I don't know if I believe it either, but I'm at least asking. I am at least asking myself the question where, if you're just like, what's better from a receiver room perspective? Like, just throwing a shit ton of superstars at it, like, and by the way, again, we don't know if all of these guys are superstars, but, like, just throwing a bunch of players at it, you know, because, by the way, like, Drake London and Rome Odunze theoretically are going to be pretty samey, right? Because they're these outside X receivers and stuff like that. Are you really throwing both these guys out there? Like, how does that work from an offensive perspective?
Listen. You're the king of mixing these guys up and around. You know, it's like, golly, that'd be a lot of fun to see Drake London move around flanker slot. I've seen Rome Odunze move around flanker spot and just again mix up the and put these defensive backs in a bind, man. Put their brain in a pretzel. Make them think. Make them work. You know, it would just be, that would be fantastic. And to answer part of your question, I think part of the answer is, who cares about Kyle Pitts at this point? Okay, I know there's a bunch of Pitts bros out there, but, like, who cares? If you get Rome Odunze, okay, we're feeding Drake London and Rome Odunze 130 targets each, and who cares about the rest of the guys? All right, Bijan's gonna get some checkdowns. Let him work and do his thing. I don't care about Kyle Pitts now. We're past that point, guys. Okay.
Oh, no. We're not.
Yes, we are. Now we're not because, again, there's no other option. It's Drake London 1 and then Kyle Pitts 2 and then, you know, Bijan 3 and Darnell Mooney and Rondale Moore going to fit in where they get in, man. But if you added somebody like Odunze, no, dude, I'm kicking Kyle Pitts to the curb and just, you play tight end and do your thing. It's okay. It's all right.
You know what? I'm not going to speak anymore on the subject because then I'm going to get the tight end charters in my mentions. So yeah,
100%.
I stand with what James said, even if I don't.
Yeah, the Ravens, they are with a wide receiver room of Zay Flowers, Rashad Bateman, Nelson Aguilar, waited till pick number 113 to take DeVonta Walker out of North Carolina. Matt, what does this say about what the Baltimore Ravens feel about their wide receiver room?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, the Ravens, you can't ever kind of count them out of like another veteran signing, right? Odell's off to the Dolphins, and we'll see what happens.
Mark Andrews they could, is there too.
Mark Andrews is obviously there, so you know he's going to be probably the favorite to lead the team in receiving yards and production and stuff like that. I think we are counting on a couple different things here. If they do not make a veteran signing, right? If they don't add like a Tyler Boyd type or something like that late in free agency, they're counting on like Zay Flowers really taking a second year leap into maybe being like a true, I don't want to say true number one receiver, mm-hmm. but a big time target earner in the intermediate area of the field. Because if you look at Zay Flowers' rookie season, very good. Okay, I loved what I saw out of Zay from a route running perspective. I think he is someone that can win against man and zone coverage. He can win down the field. He can win in the intermediate area. But they didn't really use him a ton in that intermediate area. A lot of it was like designed stuff or shot play stuff. And I think we need more in the middle there for Zay Flowers to really kind of have that second year leap. So I wonder if the Ravens are counting on him to do that. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you always want to design stuff for Zay Flowers because he's so freaking dynamic. Yeah. So that's always going to have to be part of his game. But I think for this group to work, for this group to come together, we're going to have Zay take a step in the intermediate area. And secondly, I hate to report this, guys, but we are going to do it again with Rashad Bateman. We're going to get we're getting back on the Bateman bandwagon, brother.
No, don't do it.
James, we're doing it because
God. Don't do it.
Rashad right. Bateman's agent screwed up his fifth year option. I don't know if you've been following this saga, but no. Because he didn't report to training camp right away on the advice of his representation last year, his fifth year option was forfeited. So the Ravens had to sign him to a contract extension through the 2026 season. So this team didn't want to just not have him around next year. They wanted to make sure he was going to be around, so they extended his contract. It's not making much, right? His current contract is not, you know, voluminous or anything like that, but he is signed through 2026. So that's at least interesting in that they have some, like, I think this team has watched the film and has seen that Rashad Bateman made a lot of progress as the year went on from a route running perspective. I know we talked in the very beginning of last season where I'm like, yeah, he doesn't look the same.
No, he doesn't. But
he looked a lot better as the year went on. Now, it wasn't a totally clean season. There were some drops and mistakes and stuff like that. But so much of his season last year was just about getting healthy. Remember, there were reports and an article came out where he talked to Jeff Zrebeck of The Athletic. Or he didn't even think he was going to play last season. He thought he was, you know, coming off of this foot injury, that there was a time where he wasn't even sure he was going to play. So just like making it through last season, only missing one game, I think because of a hamstring injury, was a huge jump for Bateman. So, you know, people have been asking me on the definitely check out our YouTube channel where I've been doing a lot of mailbags. People have been asking me, James, who is the player that is the guy you have a weird affinity for after you said that about me with Nico Collins last year.
Yeah.
I think Bateman is probably year's weird affinity player. And it looks like I think the Ravens, who didn't take a wide receiver until DeVonta Walker at pick 113, who, you know, if you've seen the mini sample roundup on Tez Walker, you know, I think he's got a lot of developing to do to be an instant impact player. But when they took Tez Walker, they also talked, Eric DaCosta talked about, we wanted to get more of a downfield strider so that like Zay and Bateman can run the full route tree and do more work short and underneath. And I think that's where Bateman's at his best. He's not like a downfield X receiver. He's kind of a in sort of the Keenan Allen mold where he's like an underneath route runner. So I still have faith in Rashad Bateman as a player. And I think the Ravens are telling us that they might have that faith too.
Okay, so let's say he has a good season. I still would say, and again, I want to clarify because some people listening to this are going to immediately think, oh, Matt Harmon said he's good, therefore, fantasy, he's good. I at least want to create that delineation of saying,
yeah.
Saying somebody is good in RP does not necessarily mean that they're good in fantasy. A lot of times those two things align. But I wonder, Matt, and I'll just ask you straight away, does that mean that in this particular case, because they've got Derek, they obviously went and got Derrick Henry, they've got Keaton Mitchell, who people freaking love, right? We've already got a quarterback that doesn't throw the football a lot in Lamar Jackson, regardless of coordinator. Mark Andrews is there. Zay Flowers is there. What do we think about from a statistical point of view in regards of Rashad Bateman?
Yeah, I think Bateman could have like a, you know, yeah, you just look at last year's offense, obviously. Zay Flowers leads the way by a lot with 858 receiving yards. Odell Beckham has 565. He's second on the team in yards, but he only has 64 targets. You know, Isaiah Likely.
That's insane.
I know, yeah, it's crazy.
That is insane. That's
16.1 yards per reception. He had a lot of like big boon games that boosted that. So yeah, I mean, Bateman could have like 600 yards and have a quality season next year, and
right.
I think that's sort of where we're looking at. Yeah, I mean, is he going to come in here and blow the doors off production wise? No, probably not. But I do think if he can be a quality starting receiver for this team, and Zay is a quality starting receiver for this team, and they have something in terms of the two tight end package which I said on the last show. Teams talk about two tight ends. They don't end up totally using those two tight ends a lot. So we'll see. I do think it's going to be they got to try to find some way to get Isaiah Likely on the field because he's just too good. You can't just keep him kind of stashed on the bench with Mark Andrews there, even though Mark Andrews is great. But like it just, you look at the rest of the receivers, and yeah, Nelson Aguilar, he was kind of a nice role player for the Ravens last year, and he had 381 mm-hmm. yards and four touchdowns. Like, I think he could probably be in that same bucket again, and they've just got to sort of figure out what's their best personnel group. I think it's probably they're one of the few teams that probably actually can use a lot more two tight end sets, because these are two like traditional tight ends, and Andrews actually does give you real target earning capabilities when split out from the formation. So I don't know. They're a very interesting offense, but I wonder, they're going to be never going to be high in terms of pass volume, stuff like that, as you mentioned. So, yeah, I think Bateman could have like 600 yards and still have a quality season for the Ravens.
All right, so there you go. It's an interesting makeup, certainly. Rashad Bateman, you know, sometimes we talk about, oh, can this team support 2,000-yard receivers? I actually think in this situation, we are at least considering it. In regards to Rashad Bateman, I think Zay Flowers is easy, you know, 1,000-yard, 1,100-yard receiver if we're kind of looking at it from an early perspective. But just, man, with Derrick Henry there, Keaton Mitchell there, Mark Andrews there, I wonder how much is left on the bone. But
you keep saying Keaton Mitchell. We'll see about Keaton Mitchell. He tore his ACL very late in the season. He's like 190 pounds.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's a very good point. And Derrick Henry's also getting up there in age too. But Rashad Bateman's got to stay healthy, for God's sakes.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
So we'll see. But the depth chart behind Bateman and Zay Flowers is not deep at all, which does open the door for more target share to be acquired by Rashad Bateman as well. All right, let's move on to the Cowboys here. Let's see. They've got CeeDee Lamb, Brandon Cooks, Jalen Tolbert. They let Michael Gallup go in free agency. Cowboys really did not address this at all. What do you think this tells you about what the Dallas Cowboys feel in regards to their wide receiver room?
I feel like this must tell us that they have some internal faith in this group, because, you know, we didn't bucket them in a need when we did the podcast previously on team needs a receiver. But I came into the draft thinking like
selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
In a post-Michael Gallup world, you know, you kind of should add another body to this room, because the biggest thing that made me think that, and they added Southeast Missouri's wide receiver Ryan Flownery. Another guy, pick 216, don't have a reception perception profile on. Pick 216. So, because you'd think that they want to throw the ball a lot, because their biggest addition to running back this offseason was the reunion with Zeke Elliott, you know? Like,
I know
they probably want, they definitely want to be better in the run game than they were last year, where they just, nobody was scared of them from a run game perspective. But how are they going to do that with this group of running backs? I don't know. You know, I think they could maybe be a passable run game with Zeke and Rico Dowdle and these guys, but you imagine they're still going to be one of the most productive passing offenses in the NFL. And like, maybe this is the year CeeDee Lamb has 200 targets. I mean, I think that's possible. We haven't seen a receiver do that. I think since like the 2015 season was the last time we saw receivers really go bonkers from like a target standpoint, because I remember that was the year where like Antonio Brown had 193 and Julio Jones had 203. I think that's the last time we saw something like that. DeAndre Hopkins actually had 192 that year. Could we see something like that with this offense? Because that's actually against the recent trend of the league, where in the last 10 years, or in the last like 5 years of the decade, teams have gone more spread out. We don't see target totals like that. Could we see that from CeeDee Lamb this year? Maybe. But otherwise, they're clearly counting on like Brandon Cooks to still be an impact player. Maybe Jalen Tolbert to step up. Maybe they really have faith in Jake Ferguson being a high end target earner at tight end. I know you really like Jake Ferguson. So
I love Jake Ferguson.
I think either we're going to see one of two things here. We're going to we're going to see one of three things.
Okay.
One, this passing offense is about to seriously regress from what they did last year from a volume perspective, which
I think might happen, man. If anything, Matt, I wonder how much this says about Jalen Tolbert. Do they feel like internally Jalen Tolbert is really ready to step forward and take a chunk of this pie?
It's interesting, right? I liked Jalen Tolbert as a I had him kind of ranked in the day three range, but like early round four. He went a little bit higher than that, actually. But he had a pretty good reception perception profile, a small sample of five games, but it was at a super small level, right? South Alabama. So he's one of these guys in the Sky Moore bucket where smaller sample, lower level of competition. These guys can have overinflated reception perception results and then don't do anything earlier in their career. But I don't know, maybe these guys are like slower developing pitchers, right? Where maybe Jalen Tolbert, because he had some flashes last year. I'd say he'd had some legitimate flashes last year where after doing absolutely nothing as a rookie.
Nothing.
So that is definitely at least interesting. Maybe there is some behind the scenes development by Jalen Tolbert where they're ready to just run him out as a starter next year.
I mean, for God's sakes, Jalen Tolbert last year, 36 targets, 22 receptions, just 268 yards. Jake Ferguson was actually the second leading target getter on this team with 102 targets. CeeDee Lamb, as you mentioned, 181. Brandon Cooks was right there with 81 targets. But again, he was the number two receiver with 81 targets. Matt, he had a full 100 fewer targets than CeeDee Lamb, bro. Hey, man, talking about teams that that I think desperately need an X receiver, the Lions, are certainly in that group, too. They didn't take a wide receiver, man. They're I think, happy with their room here, or at least they certainly are indicating they are, of Amon-Ra St. Brown. They spent a high draft pick, obviously, on Jameson Williams, a first-rounder. They bring in DPJ. They've got Khalif Raymond. I put in Darius Fountain on this list, Matt, because you know I am a measurable guy, and Fountain is an absolute measurables freak. He 210 pounds, has a 42.5-inch vertical, ran a sub 4.5 40. Anyways, whatever, he's probably going to do nothing. I just put him in tongue-in-cheek, but I'm on Ross St. Brown, sicko. Jameson Williams, DPJ, and Khalif Raymond, I think, are their core wide receivers here. Obviously, they've got a great tight end in that mix as well. But what do you think, them not taking a wide receiver, what story does that tell you?
Tells me just a couple of things. That one, I do think they have a lot of faith in Jameson Williams, and we'll see if that faith is misplaced or not. Because I want to chart out the full sample before really rendering judgment. And people have been pointing this out in the Discord. In my dynasty rankings, I have like a note on Jameson Williams that. Film's not good. Like, I really want to chart the full sample before tanking him, because the few games I've looked at have been really not great. But he did have some moments toward the end of the season in the playoffs, right, where you're wondering if that can be something that he builds momentum on. Because, like, to be fair to Jameson Williams, who I liked as a prospect, he was not in the same tier in that class to me as the Drake Londons and the Chris Olaves and the Garrett Wilson, but was a clear first-round player and, like, had a lot of ability. I want to kind of be fair to him that he has, and some of this has been his own fault, but he's not had the chance to really build momentum at any point in his career to this point, because it's been injuries, it's been, you know, the gambling stuff and stuff like that, right? So there hasn't really been that chance. I also think that they are telling us another thing here, which is that, yeah, I agree with you that I think we had them in justifiable pursuit, that category in terms of receiver need. I think they're actually telling us, like, we don't need a receiver because we're not going to actually count on that position as much. And if you think about it, there's kind of some wisdom here, right? And I think sometimes when we project for fantasy and stuff like that, we end up looking at just the receiver core, or even just the passing total, right? Like, okay, somebody's got to take on, you know, this big gulf behind Amon-Ra St. Brown in this receiver room. How could that not be Jameson Williams? But then you think about it from the overall offense. Jameson Williams, no matter what, unless he comes out there and, I mean, just is a totally reborn player, okay? Like, not just the guy that he was at Alabama, but even better than that. Unless that happens, in no situation is he ever going to be better than the fifth most important player on this offense. Just in terms of overall, like, guys, how often the ball is going to be in their hands, he is never going to be more than fifth. Because they have David Montgomery, who led the team in touches last year with 235. Jahmyr Gibbs, who was right there with 234. By the way, like, I think I love David Montgomery, and like they were right to give him that workload last year, but like they've got to be finding more ways to get the ball in Jahmyr Gibbs's hands, right?
For sure. Then
next is Amon-Ra St. Brown with 123 touches. Then you've got Sam Laporta with 87. Like, then next is Craig Reynolds. There's a big drop off from Sam Laporta to Craig Reynolds down at 46. Like, I think there's room for Jamison Williams to be fifth there. Whereas last year he only touched the ball 27 times in the regular season. Again, so I think this is one of the situations where it's instructive to not just think about the passing volume and opportunity. It's important to think about the entire offensive ecosystem. And mm-hmm. with this situation, it's like, yeah, it certainly, do we need another receiver in here? I think absolutely. That'd be great if we had another receiver. But even in an ideal situation, that receiver, even if he's better than whatever Jamison Williams is never going to be better. Is never going to be more than the fifth most involved player in the overall offense, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. Although you would want it to be a situation, I think, in Detroit where they at least have that conundrum, that conversation of, all right, we've got a guy that we do need to get involved a little bit more. So now it mixes it up a little bit, especially from a real life. Forget about fantasy for a second, okay? But I mean, just talking totally. About real life football, teams got to think about this player. And to be honest with you, yeah, Jamison Williams, whoever this other wide receiver is going to be, you're right, fifth best option on this offense. But teams don't have to think about this guy. Not really, not in any realistic sense. And I think that's where I'm saying Detroit, and I think you would agree, Detroit should bring in somebody that the defenses have to think about, have to respect. I just don't think you need to give safety help over the top to Jamison Williams, period. I know he's supposed to be super fast, and we've talked about on this show, you could be testing fast and not play fast, you know? And to me, I think Jamison Williams is certainly that guy. I don't think his real life speed translates to football speed. In any meaningful way. So I don't know.
I think it did before the ACL. Before the ACL at Alabama, I think it did.
Sure.
I think we haven't seen it so far at the NFL level, except like maybe one or two times. But yeah. That's sort of this exercise here is that I think the Lions are telling us that. Because, yeah, I'm like, overall, we're saying the same thing. Like, this is not, mm-hmm. this isn't really a fantasy discussion. Good is this player going to be right. type of discussion here. And that's what's interesting, because I think the Lions are telling us that they think that Jamison Williams can be that player. Because you're not going to ask much of this guy. You're not asking whoever this hypothetical second wide receiver, but really number five in terms of guys we're getting the ball to, we're designing plays for.
Right.
You're not asking a lot from that guy. You're asking them to be a credible threat enough that defenses do have to be like, wait a second. Yeah, we want to bring somebody down in the box to deal with this pain in the ass run game. Yeah, we want to try to account for Amon-Ra St. Brown on critical down and distances, but if we do uh-huh. all that, then is whoever this outside receiver is he going to make us pay? Is he going to beat man coverage to a point and use that speed to really kick our ass down the field? I think the Lions are telling us that they still have some faith in Jamison Williams to be that player. I am still in wait and see mode.
I'm just going to go ahead and say I think it's misguided, but Amon-Ra St. Brown last year, 164 targets last year, okay, 1,500 yards. We know about the freakish nature of the sun god here, but man, the second wide receiver in terms of targets was Josh Reynolds at 64. So again, another situation where Amon-Ra St. Brown had 100 more targets than the next wide receiver in Josh Reynolds. Jamison Williams last year, 42 targets last year with 354 yards and two touchdowns. Yeah, he makes splash plays. He does, you know, every now and again. But I just think from a down by down basis, man, I'm just not that sure about Jamison Williams. We'll see. Still a young player. Still very much a young player, so he could be developing as well. All right, let's talk about the Rams here. They took Texas wide receiver Jordan Whittington after pick 200. But they've got Cooper Kupp. They've got Puka Nacua. They've got DeMarcus Robinson and Tutu Atwell. Ben Skowronek still hanging around. You know he's going to get a little work every now and again, okay? But Cooper Kupp, Puka, DeMarcus Robinson, Tutu Atwell, And really, Matt, Tutu played well to start the season, and then DeMarcus Robinson late in the season, I think, kind of sort of gave them that third punch outside of Cooper Kupp and Puka. But what does the draft tell you now about what the Rams think about their room?
I think they're pretty clearly saying that they think Cooper Kupp is going to be healthy and be a completely full-go impact player to the level that we're expecting Cooper Kupp to be. Right. Like from based on his career, because you get past, and I mean Puka is a stud. Puka is the real effing deal. He is the guy we saw last year. Like no questions. There are no like anybody disagrees with that. You know they're wrong. Okay, he's that guy. But then once you get past those two, like
it's a little messy.
It's messy, man. Like, DeMarcus Robinson gave them some really nice looks at the end of last year. They brought him back on a pretty decent contract, like a one-year deal. You know, he was the one that kind of iced Tutu a little bit from that rotation.
Totally.
But, I mean, like, it's DeMarcus Robinson. Like, we know who DeMarcus Robinson is. We're not suddenly expecting him to be, like, one of the best wide receiver threes in the league. At least I'm not. I'm not there yet. Tutu Atwell is what he is, but then you get down the rest of the roster, it's not a lot of needle movers, right? And even at tight end, man, like Tyler Higbee, serious injury late in the year. I like a little bit what I saw from Davis Allen in very brief moments. They paid Colby Parkinson, but Colby Parkinson's more of a guy who's going to help you out in the run game a little bit. We know they want to run the piss out of the ball, right? They're a team that could be very Detroit-esque where, like I'm saying, the fifth option in this pass game could be way down the pecking order. I don't think they have a Jahmyr Gibbs in this backfield. They kind of have like two David Montgomerys really in Kyren Williams and Blake Corum, but like they could be just running the hell out of the ball with this big offensive line.
Totally.
I just think that if they're missing Cooper Kupp for any length of time, I'm suddenly a little worried about the passing options in this Rams offense. And I think the Rams are telling you, hey, we've got faith in Cooper Kupp. We've got faith in Cooper Kupp that he's not lost a step and that he's going to stay healthy. Both of those make me just, especially the second one, make me just a little bit nervous.
It's a very fragile team. Let's be real. Okay. Cooper Kupp is going to be 31 years old next season. Matt Stafford's obviously up there in age too. I think he's going to be 36 or 37. And it's just an overall very fragile team. Tutu Atwell's about like 110 pounds, you know. DeMarcus Robinson too. It's like, all right. I'm just saying, I think to your point here, yeah, maybe the Rams feel like Cooper Kupp is going to be all right. But this is a guy that's been dealing with number of injuries, you know. I don't know how sound that thought process is to think that Cooper Kupp at the age of 31 is going to be that guy. I don't know. It's a very fragile makeup of this team.
It's tough, man. Like Puka could be a guy that you just funnel most of your offense through. I think he's good enough to be that player. I think he's such a good fit in this offense. But it just like, if we've got no credible threats around him, you know, again, like DeMarcus Robinson, nice wide receiver three for them last year, but suddenly he's our second best receiver.
Right.
Like the tight end room is full of guys that are not true needle movers. I mean, look, Matthew Stafford and Sean McVay are all of, like, they're the equalizers here. They're going to really put the lipstick on the pig if this becomes a bad situation if Cooper Kupp gets injured. But I think they are telling us two things. One, that they've got faith in Kupp, and two, they are going to establish this thing this year. I don't know what Matthew Stafford's overall pass attempt, number is, but I'm going to go under, but I'm going to go up from like a yards per attempt perspective. Like I think he's going to be very efficient, but maybe not the most voluminous passer in the league. So yeah, I think they're telling us those two things here.
All right. It'll be interesting to see for the Saints. Okay. They didn't take a wide receiver until very, very late either, but they've got Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed, your guy, A.T. Perry, Cedric Wilson, they added to the mix as well. it's an interesting room, I think, honestly, with Olave, Shaheed, and A.T. Perry. Honestly, I think that's an actual, it's an unknown, Matt, but there's some upside there.
Yeah, I think the clear signal from New Orleans here is that they've got faith in these three guys. They should have faith in Chris Olave. I think Chris Olave, look, is I get it. It's Derek Carr. We're not sure about the overall offensive ecosystem, although I think Gary Kubiak's kid, Clint Kubiak, is going to draw up and scheme up a better, more modern NFL offense than Pete Carmichael was last year, just because...
Jesus Christ, I would hope so.
Yeah, well, very low bar, but... just like they're going to be more in line with what works in today's league. Whether Clint Kubiak is, you know, he's up here, like high-end coordinator, he's down here, just the scheme they're going to be running is just going to be more in line with what works in today's league. I think Chris Olave could have like an incredible season this year. He's so good. He's so talented that he's liable to pop off an elite season at any point. So that's the number one thing, that he's that guy. But I think this shows a good degree of faith with these two guys that you mentioned here, Rashid Shaheed and A.T. Perry. Mm-hmm. Two players that, I'm not going to say A.T. Perry is my guy like you just did, but I'm going to say he is. These are two guys that I have a degree of affinity for. I think Shaheed is more than just a shot player. I think he's a guy that could be in that John Brown mold where he takes the top off, but he is like more of a real route runner. I think we've seen some signals from Shaheed in that way. And yeah, A.T. Perry is definitely, he's an X receiver, right? And I think that's going to be interesting, the two receiver set on this team, because I think they will end up involving some multiple tight end looks and stuff like that. Who is going to be on the field in the two receiver sets? Because like, are they a team that they throw Olave out at X and Shaheed at flanker in two receiver sets? Or is it going to be, and then they move A.T. Perry to the X in three receiver sets? Or could A.T. Perry sneaky be... I hate doing this stuff, but like could A.T. Perry be in the Nico Collins role in this offense, right? Where we saw a 49ers questionable coach, right? Like, who is Bobby Slowick? Yeah, we don't know, but he comes off this 49ers tree. And Clint Kubiak, like, he's coming from, we've seen Clint Kubiak call offense before, but like, he's coming from the 49ers, and like, well, the X receiver matters a lot in this offense, right? And that could end up being A.T. Perry. So he's a very, very interesting like sleeper for this season.
I certainly brought up the potential oil and water, comparisons between Derek Carr and Olave, because what Derek Klassen charted, in 2022 was that Derek Carr was just straight up bad, when we're talking about throwing over the top, right? Below league average on the nine route, below league average on the corner route, and, about league average on the post route when we're talking about success rates here in 2022. Now, we know Olave, fantastic over the top. And to me, that friction right there, I think that's a big part of it. So can Clint Kubiak overcome that part of it where they were running Olave on all these deep routes, man? And because why not? Because he's winning the routes, but Derek Carr can't get it there. And he's never been that guy that has a great deep pass, right? So can they figure this part out, man? Are they going to work a little bit different of a route tree here for Olave in 2024? That, to me, I think will be the biggest, priority number one will be for Clint Kubiak to figure out, okay, how do we get Olave and Derek Carr aligned? Because last year, they absolutely were not.
100%.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Brett Boone, host of, you guessed it, the Brett Boone Podcast. All season and all off season long, I bring on friends, teammates, broadcasters, everyone in between for in-depth conversations about baseball, life, and a lot more. You'll get our thoughts on current happenings in the MLB, hot sports topics, and a look into my life after baseball. Catch the Brett Boone Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
you know, like if I'm Clint Kubiak, that's my number one focus. Like, yeah, we'll get to camp and we'll figure out what we do with Shahid. We'll figure out what A.T. Perry can be and all that stuff. Like, let's see what kind of shape these guys show up in, how much development has taken place with a guy like A.T. Perry, who came from Wake Forest's goofy offense and then into like an NFL role last year. And he had a couple moments. So like, that's nice. How much development has taken place there? We'll see when we get into like OTAs and mini camps and then into training camp and all that stuff. But the number one thing I'd be focused on is like, what can we do to get Chris Olave to the next stratosphere? Because that guy is too good to be like an 1,100 yard, five touchdown receiver. He should be producing way more than that. And like, what can we do to get Derek? Like, where can we get him to get Derek Carr on the to throw it and feel comfortable with it? Because again, he's just too good to be doing that.
And can Derek Carr do anything inside the red zone? For God's sakes, he was just he crossed the 20 and just turned into a completely different player, man. Between the 20s, great. Inside the red zone, horrible. One of the worst quarterbacks, I think, honestly, inside the red zone, man. Horrible. Anyways, the Eagles, again, they got A.J. Brown. You got Devontae Smith. I mean, they're paying big bucks to these big boys, rightfully so. Wide receiver 3 all of a sudden I think becomes Texas A&M wide receiver Anais Smith. I think that was a good pick for them, right? Like he fills that slot receiver role. Hey, listen, you folks can drink now. They also have Devontae Parker on the roster, baby. Let's go. Let's go. But what do you think the draft tells you? What story does the draft tell you about the Eagles in regards to their wide receivers?
So it's really interesting. If you look at the Eagles roster right now, we all know that, you know, the top two guys are some of the best in the league, right? A.J. Mm-hmm. Brown and Devontae Smith, one of the best wide receiver duos in the league. But there are a lot of questions beyond those guys, which I've been like obsessed with thinking about this year, because we just can't be like rolling out Julio Jones, you know, in the 2024 season like we did last year. We can't be Quez Watkins. We never got enough from Quez Watkins, or like, who is the guy they signed from Atlanta? Olumide Zaccheaus, right? Like, we need more from our wide receiver 3 than what we've gotten. I'm obsessed with thinking about that. Even if it's going to cause some target evaporation from the top two guys, it's like we said about the Jameson Williams thing. By the way, maybe it doesn't cause target evaporation, but it's just like, we need to give defenses something else to think about on the field. So I think this wide receiver 3 competition is going to be just that. It's going to be a competition, because if you look at the rest of their roster, like, they have some guys that are kicking around the depth, like, you know, Britton Covey or Shaquan Davis, you know, Jacob Harris, right? Like, kind of these guys. But the really interesting players are Devontae Parker, who you mentioned. Paris Campbell is on this roster. Bet you didn't know that. Paris Campbell's on this roster. and then it's Anais Smith, who they draft. I said right now. Anais Smith, who they drafted on day 3. Yeah. And then Johnny Wilson, who they drafted on day 3. That's right. 152nd and 185 overall, those two picks. And if you think about it, James, because we are the alignment bros. We are the alignment bros on this pod.
Yeah.
If you think about it, isn't it like those four guys are like, there's a lot of overlap between what Devontae Parker is going to do and what Johnny Wilson's going to do? Mm-hmm. And then a lot of like what people want Paris Campbell to do, and he's never been that good at doing, is what Anais Smith does, where he's a slot guy that can be in the backfield, that runs these layup routes, but he actually beats man coverage. 74% success rate versus man in his rookie roundup sample on the website.
Wow.
I think that's interesting. Like, he's more Curtis Samuel than he is Paris Campbell, if we're talking about these like gadgety guys that, you know, go on to become real receivers, is Anais Smith. So I just wonder if like we're gonna let those four guys compete, and then we'll see who comes out of here as the 3. And but then I think who that player is, and I would put my level of faith, like, probably if I had to rank it, it would be Smith, Parker, Wilson, Gap, Campbell. Because I just think Smith is the most intriguing. I think Parker is the most known commodity. Like, it's nothing exciting, but like, Anais Smith is slot only. Parker mm-hmm. is X receiver only.
Mm-hmm.
That yep. is going to dictate what happens to these other two receivers. I know I'm like in the weeds here and who gives a shit. I totally understand half of the audience has fallen asleep right now. I totally understand that. But it's really fascinating to think that like if Parker wins that job, like does A.J. Brown play more slot in Kellen Moore's Ooh. Offense, which is very 11 personnel. Think about what we've gotten from Keenan Allen previously. Think about what we've gotten from CeeDee Lamb in this Kellen Moore offense as an interior player. Does Devontae Smith become that guy? Because Smith has at times with the Eagles just been a pure X, right? Like mm-hmm. despite yeah. the body type. But because they've wanted to move A.J. Brown around the formation. So very fascinating to think about. Or if Aeneas Smith is just the best receiver in camp and he wins this job, right. then maybe he's a really interesting movable chess piece for this team. And they find other ways to maximize these two guys from an X receiver and flanker standpoint, being A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. So very fascinating, I think, to track what happens with these four guys deep down the receiver depth chart there in Philadelphia.
Both A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith played about 70% of their snaps outside wide. And they both played about 25-ish percent lined up in the slot. Maybe more like 30-ish percent in the slot, right? So 30-ish percent in the slot for both of those players, 70-ish percent outside, whether we're talking flank or X, for both A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. They have a need at slot. And to me, Aeneas Williams should win that job. I think he should win that job. I don't see any other players on that roster. That's why I truly question as to whether or not I really do wonder if they're going to even have Paris Campbell on the roster moving forward. By the way, Saquon Barkley on this team too. I honestly think he's going to be a bit of a target earner too. Let's see what Kellen Moore does in regards to figuring out how to get Saquon Barkley a little bit more involved, man. But this offense looks so good, bro. Just on paper.
They have a lot of interesting kind of,
Jesus.
Not big names, but like randos on this roster. But like the receivers we're talking about, you know, CJ Uzoma's on this roster. Mm. Albert O is on this roster. At running back,
they picked up Mekhi Becton too. I mean, it's like I got a lot of pieces here that if they, I don't know. This could be a really good team, man. This could be a really good offense. I mean, on paper, they look so good, man. Honestly,
I just think it's going to be so fascinating to see Jalen Hurts in a Kellen Moore offense, because if what Jalen Hurts does well and what Kellen Moore has done from like just a traditional drop back game,
right.
Very, 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 very
I
different.
I totally agree. I 100% agree. So I don't know. We'll see. By the way, if I'm Kellen Moore, it's like I kind of wonder too. It's like, is this a good fit for me? I mean, he had such a bad time with the Chargers there. His stock dropped so considerably. Man, I don't know, man. I'm curious about this decision-making process for Kellen Moore. Although maybe he looks at the roster and is like, dude, this team is so stacked that I can't fail.
Yeah, they can win. Yeah, they can win.
All right, last one here, Titans. They've got Nuke Hopkins. They've got Calvin Ridley all of a sudden out of nowhere. They've got Calvin Ridley. They've got Treylon Burks, Nick Westbrook, Akine. I love their slot guy and Kyle Phillips. If he can stay healthy, which I probably can't, but it's okay. They've got Chigo Conquo, and obviously they picked up Tony Pollard to go along with Tajay Spears in the backfield too. You talk about an offense that I think has got some really intriguing names after adding Calvin Ridley, Tony Pollard. The Tennessee Titans are it. I think their offense took a big step forward this offseason, but what does the draft tell you about what the Titans think about their pass catchers?
Yeah, and it isn't even so much the draft where, you know, obviously we had them as a substantial need team at receiver coming into free agency, and they made a mm-hmm. substantial move in drafting Calvin Ridley. And then they don't – excuse me, signing Calvin Ridley, they don't draft anyone until Tulane wide receiver Jaquan Jackson at 182nd overall, who's going to be more of a return man for them.
Right.
So there's the interesting thing is that they're very set at wide receiver one and two. They're very set at X and flanker in Nuke Hopkins and Calvin Ridley. Where the questions begin are in the slot, where you mentioned Kyle Phillips. I have said that Treylon Burks is a guy who when he was coming in the league, I mean, dude, mm-hmm. people can go back and read the profile. All mm-hmm. I said, the whole like slot guy, he should be a big slot Juju Smith-Schuster. The Treylon Burks bros hated me. They wanted yep. to tar and feather me and cancel me. But I will not be canceled. I will not be silenced. And I will be proven correct through the first few years of Treylon Burks' career that he's not. Yes. Like, I know, correct. Hey, injuries. I get it. You still like Rashad Bateman. Yeah, well, the film on Rashad Bateman's been good. The film on Treylon Burks has not been good, period, end of story. No. So I will not be silenced. But this staff seems to not be interested in Treylon Burks, because what's the first thing that they do after the draft? Early this week, shoot, by the time people listen to this, maybe they've already signed this guy, but they're talking to Tyler Boyd, right? Who is a big slot receiver. He's played under Brian Callahan in Cincinnati there with the Bengals. So he might be on the team by the time people listen to this, but that tells us that they're at least, they've got their eye on this slot receiver position too, that they think that is a position of need and that they're not 100% comfortable with what would be an experiment now with Treylon Burks. Cause I think the last front office really misevaluated him as a guy like, we'll take him and throw him an AJ Brown spot, which like, what the fuck made you think that was going to work? Like, I mean, it's just absolutely insane that was ever the plan, because he didn't play that position in college. So he had to learn a whole new position to come into the league. And like, again, I'm not making excuses for Treylon Burks, because like, I was lower on him than consensus. But like, what made you think that was going to work when he was playing in the backfield and as a slot receiver in Arkansas, that he could come out and be a day one X receiver in the NFL? So now you've thrown all that on him. Now the next staff is supposed to come in here and say like, yeah, actually, let's just go back to what you were doing before. Like, it's a lot of, to quote the great Michael Scott, snip, snap, snip, snap, snip, snap for Treylon Burks here in his role. So maybe they're just like, yeah, forget it. We're going to try to maybe trade Treylon Burks here, like a day three draft pick. Go somewhere else, try to revive your career. And then they're going to get Tyler Boyd in here. I think that is kind of just what they're telling us, that they're maybe not that high on, even if in theory I like the idea, or I liked coming to the league, the idea of Treylon Burks a big slot. I like Kyle Phillips as like a sleeper slot prospect. Yep. Maybe they're kind of like, we're not so in on that. We think actually just a guy who we know knows the system in Tyler Boyd, even if he's not a true needle mover at this point, he's probably just better fit here.
Yeah, I really would like to see them experiment with Treylon Burks. I mean, for God's sakes, they spent a first round draft pick on Treylon Burks, dude. Figure out, can you imagine if they could figure out a role for him? Like, that would be interesting, you know?
Yeah.
Increases trade value if you do want to move on, but I just to stick him in and just kick him to the curb, I think would be, to me, it's a waste of resources in what is a very limited resources environment. But you know, I also understand the want and the need of a new coaching staff to want to get new players in there and to fill out their offense and their vision too. So I get that too.
Yeah, I can kind of see it both sides, because I argued the snip snap thing. At the same time, like, Treylon Burks really only does a handful of things well, which is just like crossing routes against zone coverage. And like, can we not just have a few plays in the playbook where that's what he does from the slot receiver position, where he's not going to go against man press coverage? You would think that you can do that. And more importantly, the other side of it though is, you know, this is, like you said, limited resources in the receiver room, limited time, brother. I mean, this is a group coaching staff that we always overstate the amount of development the coaching staffs are doing, because like, they just don't have that much time with these guys, especially in the offseason, where players want more time, and justifiably so, more time off in the offseason. So a lot of it is work done on the side. I don't know what Treylon Burks is doing on the side. I'm not passing judgment on that. So, but it's tough to say, like, we're trying to change your role in the offense. We're also changing the offense. We're installing a whole new program.
Completely
and like,
new.
We got to get Will Levis up to speed on it. And we got to find ways to maximize Calvin Ridley, who we spent all this money on. And like, we got to find ways to make sure Nuke Hopkins is still happy. Like, it's just,
that's a good point.
That's a lot of brain power to use on your third receiver at best, and like reclamation project from the previous GM and the previous coaching staff.
It's like you talked about with Detroit. What option number is even if Treylon Burks develops slot player, you know, whatever, like, what number, you know, in terms of priority is he on this offense? You got Nuke, you got Ridley, you go and sign Tony Pollard. You know that Pollard and Tyjae Spears are going to get some work in too. It's like, Chigokonkwo, by the way, is still, you know, could be a big part of this offense too. So where would even Treylon Burks fit? Is he the fourth or fifth best option? How much brain power are they going to give to this guy? Maybe that answers the question as to why they want to get an experienced slot man in here who can just, you just throw him the playbook and he figures it out on his own. And then when we go play on Sunday, he's just ready to go.
Yeah, that's a great point.
All right. For those folks who have stuck around, man, we appreciate y'all. If you guys would like and subscribe, that'd be great. Go find Matt. By the way, go find Matt on YouTube. He's got a, you know, great YouTube page, very active there now as well. But for Matt Harmon, I'm James Coe. We got to go, man. We will see you later. Matt, he's going to take a much-deserved time off next week. That's okay. We'll bring in a guest, and we'll still do our thing, baby. We're going to be trucking along. But for Matt Harmon, I'm James Coe. We'll see you. Peace. And remember, it's never too late to chase your dreams.